Welcome back to another episode of the Braun Body Health and Fitness Podcast. Joining me today is Susan Cashdollar. Susan is a past guest, and she's coming back on today to talk all about Gym Crasher, which is her new brand. She talks about what Gym Crasher is, the mission behind it, and we kind of talk all things related to the gym, from machines to what makes a good gym and so on that way. So really great episode. I know you're going to love it. And be sure to check out Susan as she has entered in the Muscle and Fitness HERS contest. She could really use your help and support there. This episode and every episode in season 5 is sponsored by ISOFIT, my go-to for all things isometric strength training. Enjoy. Susan, welcome back to the podcast. I'm super excited to work with you again. Thank you so much for being here.
Of course. I'm happy to be here.
For people who aren't familiar with you or maybe all the great things that you're doing with Gym Crash, would you mind filling them in a little bit about yourself and what Gym Crasher is?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think that's something that I'm trying to figure out still. I hate to define what Gym Crasher is because I like to kind of have a hand in everything. So I want to keep it open to opportunities. But Gym Crasher kind of started out of me traveling about and always looking for a gym to drop in on. And just the process I would go through every time to find a gym. One, does it have a day pass? You know, is it open? Is it staffed? What kind of equipment does it have? Can I do X, Y, and Z there? So it was a whole process. Like, and I know a lot of people are with me, especially CrossFitters. I think that's a strong niche where, you know, you're traveling and always looking for that CrossFit box. So I just started documenting my travels and my experiences in these gyms and taking pictures of the gym space and the equipment and put it together. Started out on Instagram with just some simple posts, some good pictures of the gyms, a little caption about the gym itself, how much it costs to drop in. You know, what can you do there? Is it geared for a bodybuilder, a power lifter, you know, a CrossFitter, just an average Joe? So it started out as that. And then it quickly, you know, I've quickly, I guess, got 100 gyms under my belt. Now I'm at 200 plus gyms, mostly in the New York City area, but I do get around a little bit. So anytime I'm on the road, I make sure to hit up several gyms in whatever area I'm in. So that's kind of how it started. And, you know, it's a full-on Instagram page. And now the site is almost live. It's still in beta, but it's going to be like an Airbnb for gyms or Google Maps. Yeah, just for gyms. So when you open up the site, when you go to the site, the landing page is a map. And it has a bunch of pins of all the gyms that I've gone to, and you can click on a pin and a little pop-up box will come up with the gym's info, pictures, and then links to that gym's site, Instagram, Facebook, whatever, just the pertinent info that you need to quickly find a gym. It's a work in progress. It's a passion project for sure, but I'm looking to, you know, do other things with it too, and hopefully monetize the site. But yeah, I mean, that's what it is right now. And I want to keep, you know, I don't want to really define it, I guess, as to what it is, because I think knowing myself, it'll lead to a lot more things in the future.
Yeah, no, definitely. I really like the overview that you gave, and I really like the mission or the direction you're currently going with Gym Crasher. You know, I think plain and simple, as someone who's traveled around the country different times and stuff, it can be very difficult to find a place to work out. And, you know, in today's day and age, the more we can simplify that process for people, the better off we are, because I don't think it's a secret that the country has a bit of an issue with health and fitness in 2024. So the easier we can make it for people to find a gym, stay in the gym when they're traveling, and find something that actually matches what they're looking for. Because, you know, I've traveled in the past and it was like, well, you know, you could always go to, you know, this big box commercial gym. And it's like, but, you know, that gym doesn't even have barbells. So it just doesn't really fit my vibe. So I think that the direction you're currently heading fits a very big need and niche that a lot of us are certainly struggling to find. Where did this all come from, though? Because it sounds like, this is not something that you had planned for 30, 40 years. Like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna like open Gymcrasher someday. Like, how did we end up here as far as like from where you were in the past? Like, what got you into the fitness space? What got you motivated to make Gym Crasher the next big thing?
It's just an accumulation of my entire life, just I got into training at a very young age. I started lifting weights when I was 14, so that's well over 20 plus 25 years and more. So I've had a lot of lifting and experience training under my belt, and have dabbled into a lot of different I guess modalities of training. So from CrossFit to bodybuilding to powerlifting to wanting to do this to that to playing sports. And then kind of where I am now is what I've enjoyed most out of all of those disciplines kind of rolled into one and what works for me. And also as you're getting older too, and I think this is the case for a lot of us, it's just like trying not to get hurt. So I'm trying not to get hurt, have fun, and stay jacked is always the mission. All about aesthetics. So whatever can kind of help me with that, I'm into it. I experiment a lot with my training. I love to learn about training. I love to learn about the science behind training, and then apply it to my own and just see what works, what doesn't work, and get creative with it. I think Gym Crasher came to be because I've spent my entire life doing this training and then traveling, and I really enjoy being on the road and dropping in on a gym that I've never been to before. I think that's a lot of fun, and I would encourage anyone to do it. I think a lot of people have a fear of, not even a fear, but just, they have like the gym that they go to every day, maybe for the past 5, 10 years. And, there's just this hesitancy to go to another gym, or just this awkwardness of like walking in and not knowing where who anybody is and like where anything is. And for me, that's always the fun part, just the exploring and trying new things. And I always meet people along the way. So there's a huge social part to it too. And that's, I think, what I'm hoping to get out of Gym Crasher too, is I want it to be a community. I want it to be a community of people who enjoy training. And it'll eventually, hopefully, be a crowdsourced site where people, it's not just me contributing content, but other people as well. So that's kind of the direction it's going, and yeah, I just want it to be about training. I want it to be fun, and I want it to be super social.
I love the aspect of social and fun in training because I think that's something a lot of people misunderstand about fitness, right? Like they think that they're going to have to go to the gym and do these long, grueling workouts, and they're going to have to slave away hours and hours of their life to get more fit or to get in shape or to keep, whatever aesthetic figure that they want. And it's like, you can have fun with this. You can make it a community-based thing and you can do it with your friends. And I think that kind of getting people to realize just that fitness is actually enjoyable and not just something that we have to do, but that we get to do every day. More of a celebration of what the body can physically do than a physical punishment. Reframing that mindset, I think, is absolutely essential. And it sounds like that's really well integrated into the mission that you have. And I also really like your point, too, about the evolution of training and trying different things and kind of learning as you go, because plain and simple, we're all on that pursuit of mastery train when it comes to this. There's not really a one size fits all approach for exercise, not one thing, not one cue works for everyone. And the only way we can continue to, you know, evolve in that space is to continue to learn. And I think one of the best ways to learn is, just as you alluded to, going into different gyms, talking to different people. Maybe it's, you know, I think you've probably gotten to meet some great gym owners and trainers and that sort of thing. And you've probably picked up, you know, decades worth of wisdom just by conversations in them. And those are things you're probably not even going to find in a textbook, right? Like, there's something to be said about that human to human interaction and picking up on other people's experiences and what they found in their own training and working with their own clients that you can take away from simple conversations with them that you won't find anywhere else.
Right. Yeah. It's there are a lot of diehards out there too. And it's especially the niche that I quote unquote crash. The types of gyms that I like to go to are the more mom and pop gyms, the gritty gyms, these old school gyms that, you know, are kind of the last of a dying breed. You know, you have like your Bev Francis, you know, classic gym on Long Island, and the original Metroflex in Texas, and all these hardcore gyms in Jersey, like Diamond Gym. You know, these gyms have been around since like the 60s, 70s. There was a gym I went to in LA, established in 1938, still in the same building, has a lot of the same equipment there. I mean, I think that, to my knowledge, is the oldest gym in the US. You know, and then I get to chat with Bev Francis and the owners of these gyms, and they all live and breathe this shit. You know, it's great. It's just everyone, like, the gym is their home. That's, you know, that's where they live and breathe it. And it's just fun to meet people who enjoy the same things that you do and just chat it up for a bit and get a good training session in, and yeah, try new things and learn new things.
Yeah, I think that's a great point too, is the overall culture and environment of the gym is very different from one to the next. And you said that you like more of that gritty kind of gym vibe. What exactly defines a gritty gym? Like, are you looking for certain things as far as equipment goes, or like just a certain like grungy feel when you walk in, or what makes the gym like perfect for Susan Cashtaller?
That's hard to pinpoint, I would say perfect. But I wouldn't say grungy. I think grungy is tipping into dirty a little bit, but gritty as in like old school, hardcore, but still clean and put together. I mean, there's a fine line between gritty and grungy and like hard and old school and just plain up dirty, you know? So I do like a clean gym, one that's well maintained, the equipment is functioning. That's really important. And I think I've been to gyms that have claimed to be quote unquote hardcore, but they're just dirty, you know, and that's their whole, oh, we're hardcore, but nah, you're just dirty, you know, nothing's like re-racked. Everything's out of place. Nothing's working here. So you have to have a functioning gym. It has to be well-kept, clean, organized. You know, the equipment's working well. It's safe. You know, there's space to walk between the weight machines. I would say my perfect gym, going back to the question, is a combination of that old school hardcore gym, like a Bev Francis, that has an eclectic mix of gym equipment. So it's not like all Arsenal everything or all Atlantis everything or all this, but it's like the owner handpicked, hand selected every single piece that's in that gym, and it's been, you know, accumulated over the years. And the gym owner has a background in training and is either a bodybuilder, powerlifter, you name it, themselves, and knows what they're doing and knows what kind of equipment to get. And it's not like everything matches when you go in. It's just, you know, you have a Body Masters cable machine, and then you have a Nautilus calf machine, and then you have, you know, like your Precor and your Life Fitness and the newer stuff, you know, like the Atlantis and the Arsenal. That I think is my kind of gym, because there's a little more thought behind it, and there might be like six different leg extension machines, and one of those machines is going to work really well for you, guaranteed.
I love that you bring that up because it's like I have my favorite leg extension machine at the gym I go to. They have like four or five of them, but like there's one that I need to have every morning. And if I don't get it for leg day, the rest of my day is not very fun, right? So I think that's a really interesting point as well.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the equipment that's made is one size fits all. A lot of the newer equipment, especially, there are no adjustments on it, which is astonishing to me. And you get on it and it's supposed to fit, a 6'5" guy and a 4'8" woman, so I do like a lot of these relics, like Nautilus. A lot of this stuff is still some of the best equipment made. But Arsenal makes a lot of good equipment too, and Atlantis makes a lot of great equipment, and Rogue, and it's just and that's why I like the gyms where the owners have hand selected each piece and just have this mutt of equipment, and you're guaranteed to find something that you like.
Yeah, no, definitely, definitely. And I've noticed that's something that you tend to post a lot about online as well, is I've seen so many different unique pieces of equipment that I've never seen before through you and what you do online. And I think that really speaks to the importance of trying new places, new gyms, new things, because there's so many amazing things out there. And like I didn't even know about half of them. I've seen you use different Kaiser things, different like aqua rowers, all kinds of crazy things that I never knew existed. What has been like the most interesting or, like eye-catching thing for you that you've seen so far in that kind of new equipment or equipment evolution space?
This one wouldn't even pertain to like your regular commercial gym. I mean, it might in the future. And you might have seen this on my feed recently. That Beyond Power Voltra, the portable cable machine. That's great. If you can get your hands on one, you'll love it. It is like it's like a Kaiser functional trainer in a super portable, super light. I mean, you can carry it anywhere. It came in two pieces. I had it assembled in 30 seconds, and I hate directions. I hate like reading instructions. So for me, it was just perfect that I could just hook it up to the squat rack and get it going. I think it delivers up to like 200 pounds in resistance. But the best part about this Voltra is that there are different modes. So, like Kaiser, you can go as fast as you want, and that force is going to stay constant throughout that range of motion. Traditional cable machine at the gym, if you go really fast at the beginning, momentum takes over, and you're just kind of like at the very end there, that's all momentum. Whereas with the Kaiser machine or with this Voltra, that force stays constant all the way through the range of motion. So it's going to be just as hard out here at the end of the swing, the rotation, as it is at the beginning. It also has this mode called it has, well, several other modes. One's called damper. So that's it kind of simulates parachute running. So the faster you go, the faster you do a movement, the more resistance you'll feel, just like a parachute opening up. It has a resistance band mode. So the further out from the machine you go, the more resistance you'll feel, and then the closer you get to the machine, it'll be less resistive. And then my favorite, and what I use the most out of the Voltra so far and Kaiser too, is just this ability to train accentuated eccentrics. So you can load up pretty heavy on the eccentrics. So say you're doing any movement. And you can, that's the nice thing about this Voltra too. And I'm not getting paid by them, by the way. But you can set it up super high on your squat rack. You can kind of put it anywhere you want. So you can do some lat pull downs if you have it set high. You can have it set low and do some like rotational lifts, something like that. But you can overload the eccentric for basically any movement. And we all know that eccentrics is all the talk right now, I guess, in the training world, and just its benefits on hypertrophy and strength. And I just love being able to overload the eccentric. It's really hard to do on you know you, it's really impossible to do unless you're like creating some sort of longer lever, you know, yourself doing a movement with dumbbells or a barbell, or if you have a partner who can, you know, push on you during the eccentric part. So that is huge for me. And not only does it have those different modes, but it's super smooth. It's such a cool piece.
Yeah, that really simplifies the whole concept of cable training and kind of replaces a lot of different equipment in just one thing by the sounds.
Yeah, and I think the hard part, though, I think for gym owners, one, well, the con is the major con, and maybe the only con is that it's super expensive. I think it's a few grand at least for one of these little cable systems. And then you, as a gym owner, run into the issue of, you know, just members just not using it correctly and breaking it. So will it ever be, you know, in a commercial gym? Maybe your select gyms that are, you know, a little more private. But, you know, it's going to be hard to find that piece anywhere.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that has a really interesting application from a travel standpoint because it sounds like it's just a small little thing that you could like throw in a backpack by the sounds.
Yeah, pretty much. It's not terribly heavy, and it's pretty compact. So yeah, you could take it places.
That's interesting.
Yeah, the hard part would be I don't think it fits on just anything. So you have to have certain dimensions, you know, like a squat rack or something sturdy that you can attach it to first of all, and then it has to meet certain dimensions for it to work.
Yeah, no, I like the sounds and the concept of that though, because as someone who, I feel like every week we're breaking another resistance band or like, at the gym, like it's just kind of like a hunt to try and find an open cable machine sometimes. I really like the sounds and the concept of that. And that's the kind of thing too, to your point on the eccentrics or the point on just the variable resistance that you can really set with the device. I think that really evolves our understanding and application of training, right? Like plain and simple, I could just grab a cable column and do a cable rotational type pattern movement. But if I change the way I do that same movement, I could feel very different things and stimulate very different things in the body. So having these kinds of advancements or these different types of options to work in from a training standpoint really allows like one thing to be done a million different ways, really.
Yeah, and going back to the eccentrics and then the eccentric mode on the Voltra, so what that allows you to do that you couldn't do before, or that you could do before, but it would be hard to do or harder to do on the cable machine. So if I want to do, let's say, a rotation, and I'm doing a lot of these days for my obliques, if I wanted to accentuate the negative or the eccentric, I would have to pull the cable out very close to my body and keep it in, and then kind of like punch it out and then do that eccentric. And then use momentum or pull that cable back close to my body, shortening the lever arm, getting it out there first, setting myself up, and then doing the, you know, heavy eccentric. Or I'd be just limited to how much I could load based on how much I could pull out concentrically, in other words. You're always stronger eccentrically. So you're limited in that motion by how much you can pull out concentrically. Whereas this Voltra, it sets it for you. So let's say I'm doing that same cable rotation, it'll automatically adjust the eccentric portion. It'll automatically add weight once I get out to the end of the concentric. So I might have 20 pounds and I can do that just fine on the concentric portion of the rotation. And then once I hit that end phase there, and I'm about to go back into the eccentric, it'll load up, say, 15 pounds for me automatically. Because I had set it before I started. And then, you know, it takes me back. Once I get to the end of the eccentric, it deloads. I'm back to 20 pounds. So it's doing all that for you. And you can do both the concentric and the eccentric. And the loading, deloading is super smooth too. So you can go pretty much as fast as you want, and it's loading, deloading in milliseconds.
Yeah, and I feel like if I remember correctly, you also do like eccentric isometric training sometimes as well. Like you hold and then go into the eccentric, and you'd be able to do that same thing too, right? Hold for 10 to 15 seconds, then go into your eccentric from there.
Yeah, I mean, you could do that on your own. The machine, and this is something that somebody could make a lot of money on, and no company that I know of has done this yet. But programming these tech devices to load for an isometric, or there are different types of isometrics. Let's say it's an EQI, which is an eccentric quasi-isometric. So you're basically holding an isometric. We're going back to those cable rotations for as long as you can until failure. And then instead of just stopping, you're letting, that cable pull you through the eccentric portion of the rotation. So that's called an eccentric quasi-isometric. The machine isn't programmed to really hold you there and fight you against that isometric. You could do it on your own and then just tap out and then go through the eccentric phase. But as far as I know, no tech pieces have like tapped into the isometric world yet. And I think that is coming soon because I think isometrics in the sports world especially is on the rise again. And we see the benefits of isometrics for not only rehab, but just getting stronger and for performance. So I think if these tech companies like Voltra and or Beyond Power and like Vitruvian and Tonal, that is something that they should start looking into, how to program for isometrics too, not just eccentrics.
I love that you bring up isometrics because it's like the podcast is sponsored by an isometric strength training company or something like that, right? Like, huge proponent of isometrics. And it's so interesting to see how that's evolving as well. And one of the things that I've started to look for in gyms is literally wall space, because I do a lot of wall type ISO exercises with, like, a ball at a wall or different things like that. And it's been crazy to me just how many gyms don't have like open space to just do like, GPP calisthenics or like, push or move against a wall and that sort of thing. I love your point on isometrics and taking it back to like the gym side of things. Like, I would love to see that get put in gyms more. Power racks are great. I think every gym needs racks. Every gym needs to have machines and dumbbells and certain things that way. But, me and my biased opinion, I love my ISOs, and I would love to be able to go into the gym and jump on like an ISO fit or something like that and crush, 10 to 15 minutes of ISOs. I also feel great after I do ISO loading. So that's kind of become my new warm up as opposed to like stretching. I just feel a lot more engaged and a lot more free to move, and as opposed to like tight and restricted and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a lot of different ways to apply isometrics. And I think we're still finding out the benefits of isometrics. And I know the machine you're talking about, the ISOFIT, right? But yeah, I haven't used one yet. It's on my agenda. I've chatted with Brad briefly, and I passed by a gym called Rise.
In New
It's a
York
VersaClimber,
City.
yeah, in New York, and they have not only do they have the VersaClimbers, but then their off VersaClimber exercise is using the ISOFIT. So they have, I don't know, 20 ISOFITs in the space there, maybe more, maybe less, but yeah, I just kind of peeked my head in, and that was cool to see. That's definitely something novel, I think, for the group studios.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And I think that's a whole nother area of fitness. I'm glad you brought that up, is like your group fitness studios too, because, while I love to go to the gym and lift heavy and like, throw a car on a deadlift frame and like deadlift a car or something like that, like some people literally just want to find like the yoga class or the spin class or something like that. Is that something that you've kind of started to work into on Gym Crasher as well? And what is your take on that whole group fitness, studio fitness type of world?
Yeah, it's not something that I've incorporated yet into Gym Crasher. It's definitely not my niche, but it's something that will be incorporated eventually. I personally do. I'm not a fan of group fitness, but I'm a fan for other people who are fans of it, if that makes sense. I think to each his her own. And that, yeah, it's not something that I particularly enjoy. To answer your question, Jim Crasher will eventually have categories. So when you go to the site, you can find a gym based on, what kind of gym is it? Is it a powerlifting gym or bodybuilding gym or a CrossFit gym? Is it a boutique? Is it, specifically for yoga, or is it like a Globo gym? So I think when it gets to that point, when it gets big enough, then I'll have to start categorizing everything. So yeah, that's on the agenda.
The agenda is definitely growing, I'm sure. But one of the many things that I respect about you, Susan, is that you know yourself and know what you like and know what's not really for you. And you're not the kind of person who's going to sit here and say, like, oh my gosh, yeah, I love group fitness, when in reality, it's not your thing at all. And I think that's one of the many reasons I respect you and this whole Gym Crasher mission is you stay real and authentic to who you are at the end of the day. And I know that if I was going to start talking about like bad gym experiences or what ruins a gym, like what ruins a gym and the vibe of the place, you'd give me a super upfront answer about it. So for all the people listening who maybe they have a gym and they're like, hey, what's keeping people away? Or, why is it that people don't, enjoy the gym as much? That sort of thing. What really can ruin that environment and that experience for people, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think that just based on the reviews that I read online from other people, usually has to do with, especially these commercial gyms, they're owned by somebody who doesn't even live in the area. It's not a person, it's a company. And, so things fall apart, things aren't fixed, equipment is unusable, there are leaks and this and that. And it's basically everything that, the difference just between a great gym and a bad gym is just the opposite. And you have somebody without a fitness background just blanket buying these, the equipment. So it's all one brand. It might not be the best pieces. And then a lot of the bad reviews I see are, just based on the membership. It's sometimes hard to get out of a contract or like the hidden fees. And I see a lot of that, I think, more than anything with ba like a bad review. It's usually about the membership dues and the fees, and then the equipment just not working, and just things falling apart and being dirty. That said, I think that the opposite is true for a great gym. It's just somebody who has a background in fitness, knows what they're doing, knows what kind of equipment to get, knows what their members want and need, and cares about the gym space, treats it like their home, expects the members to treat it like their home, is very strict about protocols like, re-rack your weights and do that. And some of the strictest gym owners have the best gyms, because I know gym owners who charge, I think it's like a couple $100 if they catch somebody not re-racking their weights. There's a gym in Connecticut that does that, very strict, but he's got one of the best gyms around. So yeah, I think just a gym owner being present versus not present, and a mom and pop gym versus a commercial gym, just being present, being on site and taking care of the equipment. I mean, that makes all the difference.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I think in today's day and age, that point on authenticity is absolutely essential, especially in the fitness space. I certainly think that if you're in the fitness space, or from a business standpoint, you're in the fitness space, you yourself should probably be in the space in some capacity as well, to the point that you made earlier. I've noticed that you really like places that are owned by the former bodybuilders, the power lifters, that sort of thing. And I certainly think that that's an essential element. I think it's hard to be an expert in something if you yourself don't do that. And I think that fitness, as we've talked about, looks different for everyone. Just because, one person loves bodybuilding doesn't mean that, they can't Like if say I love bodybuilding, I could make a bodybuilding specific gym, and that might, steer away some strongmen competitors or something like that. Like, just because you have a great gym doesn't mean it's great for everyone. And knowing your audience and knowing the people that you want to target and providing things that are of value to them, right? Instead of just a matter of what you want in the gym for yourself, consider the people that you're working with and the people that you're serving by providing that kind of space, right? I think it's so easy to get caught up in, the new shiny whistle and shiny toy that you could put in the gym. But if you're constantly trying to sell the next big thing and all the cool new stuff that you just bought, then you're missing the most important piece, which is the people there and the people that you work with day in and day out. And the more you can create that culture and environment that allows them to do what they want to do in a space that is kind of more tailor-made to them than some kind of general place, the better off you're going to be, I think.
Yeah, and I have nothing against commercial gyms. I'm a member of Blink Fitness too. Granted, it's free through my insurance, but I think, I drop in on Blink maybe once, twice a week and just have at it, and it's great, serves the purpose. So it's basically you get what you sign up for, and if it's not the gym for you, hopefully you can find another gym in the area that accommodates what you need. But yeah, I'm definitely not against commercial gyms or group studios or to each their own. But yeah, my niche in Gym Crasher is definitely more of that gritty old school gym and more of like the bodybuilding type of gym.
Yeah, definitely. And you mentioned before that aesthetics are an essential piece of the training that you do yourself. Talk me through what your own training looks like. Like, do you have a split? Do you have a day where you just go in and try new things and experiment and come up with all the crazy new exercises that I'd love to take from you? Or how do you kind of go about training yourself?
Yeah, I'm pretty disciplined, as you could probably imagine, but I'm kind of all over the place. I don't keep track of anything. I don't write anything down. Everything's in my head and it's on constant replay. So for me, that's enough. Like, I know what my numbers are all the time without writing anything down. I focus a lot right now on my ass and my abs, I would say. So it's a lot of glute training. I'm in the process of writing this entire course on training the abs for specifically hypertrophy. So I'm doing a lot of experimenting and a lot of, I'm using myself, as a guinea pig for a lot of this training just to see what works, what doesn't work, see if I can come up with anything new. Yeah, so a lot of my training is right now tailored around my lower half and my abs. But I definitely keep up with, I would say my upper body is more like calisthenics. I'm doing like weighted push-ups, weighted pull-ups. And that like really hits a lot of my upper body for me. I hardly train arms. I do dips a lot. I just kind of came out of the womb with a massive back. So I don't have to train my back and my upper body too hard. It's just kind of like how I'm built. Yeah, so I know every week what what I did the previous week. I'm always trying to take my numbers up, but I'm also very happy just kind of maintaining and having fun too. So there's not a lot of pressure on me around numbers right now. I would say I'm a bodybuilder at heart. I do love to lift and I do love to incorporate a lot of high volume training. I love the burn, but I'm also very like performance driven. So I care a lot about power and speed. And so I'm doing a lot of like athletic work too to increase my performance, and just being able to move and move well is very important to me.
Yeah, you want to have your cake and eat it too at the end of the day, right?
Yeah.
Like, you want to have the aesthetics, but you also want to have the athleticism
Right.
as well. And I think that that is absolutely essential. I also really want to plug your ab training thing for a second, because when you come out with that, let me know. I want to take that course. I want to do a podcast about that course, because I think core training has so many misconceptions behind it, right? Like, ab training is not do, 5 sets of 100 flutter kicks or something like that. It's not throw, two exercises at the end of your workout every day. Like, for some reason, we forget how to train the abs for some reason. So I certainly think that there's a lot of misconceptions around that. And it's so funny that you bring up hip training and that sort of thing, because one of my favorite exercises that I use a lot comes from you, and it's the little Captain Morgan, like push into like a plyo box type thing. I
Cash dollar.
absolutely love that, and I credit you with coming up with that.
That's the cash dollar.
The cash dollar,
Yeah.
yes. So I love the way your mind works around training. And I really like to have noticed that it seems like anytime you get done visiting a new gym, there's some kind of new evolution in the way your mind works around training or the way you think about exercise.
I have one of those brains that is just the wheels are always turning. So when I see something, I'm like, oh, how can I make this better? Or what else can I do with this? And I think and this is part of the abs course too. It's and going back to your point you made about the abs, it's ridiculous to me that, at one point, I think maybe a decade ago, everyone treated the abs as if it weren't even like the same type of muscle as like the rest of your body. Like it was like made up of something different. Like it's just really bizarre to me how the abs have been treated over the years. And I think it's starting to come around a little bit. But then you also have to understand like the purpose of something. Like some people, a lot of the arguments online about this way is better, this way is better, this way is better. This person's trying to achieve something different than this person. Like this person is just training to get bigger. And this person is training for longevity. And this person is training for this specific sport. So they're all arguing different points that it just doesn't make sense. But the abs course that I'm working on right now, it's just all about getting bigger. It's just all about aesthetics. And you just train your abs like you do your biceps or your chest. If you want bigger biceps, there's a rep scheme for that. Train to failure or train to near failure. And you're between right now it's like 5 to 30 reps, but stay in that mid-range. And you got to know what, the abs do. How do they function? They flex and they prevent extension and they rotate and they prevent rotation, they laterally flex. And so once you know that, like what the abs do and like where they originate and insert on the body, then you can, start to understand, oh, what kind of movements to do to replicate that, to take them through their full range of motion. And then once you understand that, it's like, okay, these are the exercises that I want to do that take the abs through their range of motion and that do that efficiently and safely. But then on top of all of that, those exercises allow you to, or you can progressively overload those exercises. And that's key, that you choose exercises that you can consistently and continuously overload to just like any other muscle group. If your goal is hypertrophy, you want to choose an exercise that you can keep loading more and more to get
Yes,
more stimulus.
completely agree.
So that's the course. It's like giving you the exercises that you can do that with that are safe, that are effective. And then before that, it's like a little anatomy, a little bit about contractions, a little nerd out first. But yeah, I forget what the question was. I think I just like went off in a tangent.
Well, I mean, thank you for the importance of the anatomy as well, right? Like, how often do we forget the anatomy behind what we're training, right? It's so quick and easy to just, jump on, a squat machine and crush squats because it's great for our quads. But I've seen a number of people jump on the squat machine that's going to target a little bit more of a hip extension, glute, hamstring type pattern. than a quad type pattern, right? Or, depending on how we move, might impact what we feel when we do a movement pattern like that. Different things like lever length, femoral length, that sort of thing come into play. So I certainly think it all comes back to the anatomy, and I love that plug, one from the abdominal training side of things, but two, also from the gym side of things, because you mentioned earlier about gym equipment and how it's very different and it's not all built the same. I mean, plain and simple, if you're just blanket buying gym equipment, you could get, as we mentioned earlier, six different leg extension machines, six different calf raise machines, and each one is going to do things a little bit different. You're going to feel a little bit different, target different things. So really having that background understanding in anatomy and biomechanics, in my opinion, is absolutely essential to putting together, that ideal gym setup or the ideal gym kind of environment if you're going off of the equipment side of things. Because if you don't understand that, you're just buying stuff to buy stuff.
Yeah, and just having used the equipment before you buy it too. Like, I've been on some equipment that's from a great brand, and like a leg press, for instance, I was on at this really fancy gym upstate, and I couldn't even get full range of motion. Like, the machine itself wouldn't allow me, the leg press wouldn't allow me to lengthen far enough to get full range of motion. It just stopped me. I was like, oh, I can only go like this distance on this leg press machine. It was just the way the machine was designed. Yeah, just stuff like that. There's a lot of equipment that just kind of shorten your range of motion that are just poorly made. So I think as a gym owner, getting on the equipment before you buy it, before you buy this $1,000 plus machine, is crucial. Does it work? Can I go full range of motion on this? Does it feel good? Yeah.
Yeah, and not just equipment in relation to machines or benches, but I've noticed a huge difference in barbells lately. Like if I go to a commercial gym, I'm going all over the place trying to find a like legit like Texas power bar or at minimum an Ohio power bar to do deadlifts with and squats and that sort of thing. Because I've noticed a lot of gyms just buy these like cheap beater bars that don't seem to hold up to anything above 300 or 400 pounds. And if you're lifting with like a deadlift bar and it flexes a little bit, great, it's supposed to. But if you have a little beater bar and the bar looks like it's going to snap in half, I get a little concerned,
Yeah, I'm sure those are more of the commercial gyms where you experience that, right?
Yeah, you probably won't find that in your old school mom and pop type places that often.
Yeah, I've been to gyms, and I'm very much against what I'm promoting here. I'm in the corporate world, and I train most often at a corporate gym. But I've come across weights that are, what would you say? It was like hexagonal, like the ones that,
Yes, yep.
yeah, oh, I hate that. I'm like, why did they even make these? Yeah, those are the worst. There's a lot of stuff out there, and I'm sure they serve a purpose for something. I'm sure there's one reason out there that, that it serves that purpose. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff out there. I'm like shaking my head.
What's your take on 35-pound weight plates?
Oh, I use them.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I have nothing against the 35-pound plates. I think they make my weighted pull-up life easier, but I've noticed a lot of gyms don't have them, or some people have this like hatred of the 35-pound plate. So it's interesting to see the hills that people die on sometimes as it comes to the gym.
Yeah, I think the 35-pound plate, I think, well, first of all, weights are expensive. So if you're going to skimp on anything, I think like that's the first thing that goes. It's like, okay, we'll get some 10s, some 15s, or some 10s, some 25s. So it's 10, 25, 45. And then what's the first to go? The 35s, right? Maybe just to cut cost. But I utilize the 35s all the time. I do. I'm not benching right now. I'm not. I do like to bench, but I haven't been benching right now. I do a lot of weighted push-ups, and I use the 35s a lot for that. And like you, I use the 35s for my weighted pull-ups too. So I do like having them. But that would, I guess, be an explanation for why gyms might not have them, just because cost.
Yeah, definitely. And I would love for you to go back and say that part about you doing weighted pull-ups louder, especially to all my high school and college female athletes that I work with, because I can't tell you how many times I hear, a lot of these younger girls that I work with saying, "Well, I can't do a pull-up," or, "I shouldn't be able to do that." And it's like, but you can do it. You can train up to it, and you can actually move weight with it. Like, it's possible. And I love that you're able to do those things yourself. And I love that you yourself just seem to continue to defy any kind of physical limitation or physical odd that gets thrown at you. I feel like you're the kind of person that, you just continue to soar above and beyond in everything that you do, whether it's relating to work or gym crash or your own training. And I think that's something the world needs a little bit more of, Susan. And with that said, where can people find you at to keep up with all this amazing stuff that you're doing? And, is there anything that we missed as we were talking today?
Well, thank you for that. It's a lot of pressure. They can find me at I would say most active on Instagram at Susan Cash Dollar. Probably the best Instagram to follow if you're into gyms and gym porn is at Gym Crasher. I'm even more active on there. And then soon it's gymcrasher.com coming
That'll be
soon.
amazing. I can't wait to link to that in the description below there. And I certainly look forward to giving gymcrasher.com some amazing shout outs in the future here, Susan. I love everything that you're doing, and I just can't stop laughing at that gym porn comment. That's freaking hilarious.
That's what it is. It's like a page for people with gym fetishes.
Oh my goodness. I really appreciate your time, and it's always great catching up with you, Susan. Thank you so much for everything.
Thank you.